Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Pulse of the People, where we wake up Americans to fight for their democracy. It's Monday, August 17th, 2020, coming to you live from New York, New York. I'm here with our legal moderator, Stephen Jackson. We have a great show for you today during the protests of the Postal Service Prevention and the DNC. Stephen, our legal eagle, what is your perspective for election 2020?
Good evening, everyone. Just when you think Trump could not go any lower, he does. His attempt to sabotage the election by kneecapping the Postal Service, as President Obama so eloquently put it, in our faces, in full view, is a new low. Once again, creating a crisis, but this time again, undermining another institution, the Post Office, and attempting to disenfranchise voters. We'll also be looking into the continued police protesting of police brutality and the president's response to the various protests. The coming together of multicultural and multiracial groups in support of the movement, in addition to corporate America's apparent support of Black Lives Matter. Erica?
Today, we have a special guest for you today. Kevin Mosley, civil rights attorney, amongst other legal accolades, has represented plaintiffs in race discrimination cases against Morgan Stanley brokerage firm, the Gregory Seabrook versus New York Fire Department case of the noose placed in the locker of Black employees, the police assault victim Michael Menio, sodomized by New York Police Department officer in Brooklyn subway. Kevin was selected for Super Lawyers 2016, a peer-rated lawyer system whereby only the top-rated attorneys in New York are selected. Also, Attorney of the Year for Who's Who among notable alumni for 2015, he was given the Tolerance Award by the Southern Poverty Law Center due to civil rights litigation efforts in 2005. Kevin Mosley received his J.D., at St. John's University School of Law in New York. Welcome to the show, Kevin Mosley.
Thank you, Erica and Steve. I'm very happy to be here.
Welcome aboard, Kevin.
Kevin, what message do we need to send to empower the community of their civil rights in regards to election 2020?
Well, there's so many things happening, so many moving parts, it's hard to answer that, but I'll try. I think the community needs to be as courageous as it can be by getting out there and being heard, but be safe. We're in a very, I would say, extraordinary time, but it's really a horrible time. The president has abandoned facts and repeats lie after lie, and to abandon facts is to abandon freedom. I just think that the empowerment here comes from fighting all the untrue actions and the illegal actions that his administration are doing, and in particular, civil rights and the election are intertwined because, as Steve made reference, President Trump is attempting to cripple the post office, which is essential for the minority community civil rights, as well as everyone's civil rights with regard to election 2020.
Kevin, what legal recourse do we have, whether it be criminal or civil, to address President Trump's attempt to sabotage the election via kneecapping the Postal Service? What legal resources are available to us as citizens?
Well, you indicate that President Trump is kneecapping the Postal Service. Some people might take issue with that, except they can't, because President Trump himself said that that's what he's doing. And he said that that's
right.
What he's doing in order to prevent mail-in balloting, which he tries to confabulate with absentee balloting. It's interesting to know that President Trump himself is using a mail-in ballot, which of course he calls an absentee ballot because he's out of the state of Florida. But it's the same thing. It's the same piece of paper, physical paper. In terms of what recourse we have legally, there are things that are happening right now. Just by way of backdrop, the Voting Rights Act of 1965 prohibits anyone from suppressing the right of franchise, that is to vote. So Trump trying to undermine the post office is essentially a violation of civil rights. And it appears to me to be a criminal conspiracy if one really looks at it, because he is in cahoots, for lack of a better word, with the Postmaster General. He stated what his goal is, and the motive is to make the outcome of the 2020 election so difficult to call. Don't forget Bush versus Gore in 2000, where the thing of the ballots was stopped by brute force on the part of Republicans. And in terms of what kind of remedies we have, some of the states have already initiated their own investigations of President Trump and the postmaster and whether there's a conspiracy going on. The Congress has called on the FBI to open an investigation. And we also have today, there were several individual lawsuits filed by persons, including one in New York, who actually say that their rights were infringed upon in the recent primary. New York's primary, I think, was June 23rd. Other states as well, people have filed this. So there's active individual suits, and the ACLU, as well as the AARP, which has 38 million members, have written legal letters to the post office or postmaster general to cease and desist, in effect. And the motive, of course, as I said, was to make the election uncallable. And Trump just issued a tweet, I think on Saturday, saying that we will never know who won the 2020 election if mail-in voting is allowed. So that's really what we're up against.
I mean, like I said, he basically put all of this in our faces, a direct affront to us as individual citizens, and also to our entire democracy. Basically, flaunting his abuse of our democratic principles, and it's interesting that he appears to focus his angst against absentee ballots or mail-in ballots, as you indicated, are pretty much the same thing. He's centered on the battleground states that he happens to be down in the polls in. So, I mean, clearly it suggests an overt conspiracy on behalf of the president and his supporters, his hand-picked postal leader, to intentionally debilitate the system in order to undermine people's right to vote. And certainly, hopefully, the actions that are being taken by individuals and by our public officials will have an effect of undoing the president's dastardly deed here.
Well, you're right about that, Stephen. What he's doing is so brazen, actually removing mail sorting machines, which the ones he's removed would sort millions of letters. And he's removing mailboxes, letterboxes from the streets and cutting down on any overtime that would be needed to handle the extra mail from a significant number of mail-in ballots. Now, the mail-in ballots this election are extraordinarily important because we're in a pandemic. And notwithstanding what President Trump says and his lackeys say, it's not all okay. And the United States is not leading in this or that or anything in terms of the coronavirus except deaths. So reasonable people do not want to go to a crowded election place. That's why there's been lockdowns. And this election is going to be in November at the height of the flu season. And the safety concerns are just extraordinary. And, another minor point is if you notice with someone the mask issue, you have a lot of like MAGA people who won't wear masks. I don't think those people have any problem going into a crowded voting area, but I think other people who have a little bit of a modified thinking process won't want to do that. And you could bring corona home to your children, your wife, your husband, your grandmother, and it's a very dangerous thing. Just in terms of the post office is a venerable institution. It was created by the Constitution. The first Postmaster General was Benjamin Franklin, a man of integrity, honor, and learning, and I stress learning. He wasn't a Trump donor or, let's say, a Washington donor who gave $1.5 million to Trump's campaign and just got paid back by getting that job and working hand-in-hand with President Trump to, in effect, destroy the post office. And that's not the only institution, by the way. He's attacked the FBI, all of the intelligence agencies. So the Environmental Protection Agency has been dismantled, as today we know from the drilling and that's going to happen in Antarctica, Alaska. And I could say more on that, but I'll leave that there.
It's so much coming down the pipeline. It's more gangster tactics than presidential. The statement that you made about abandon the facts, you abandon the freedom, really to drive it home to the audience of what's taking place. The statistics, as you were saying, show that the MAGA or those who support Trump are more likely to get excited about going to a rally, therefore show up at the polls, as opposed to disenfranchising those who are at home. And I'm seeing reports all over social media where people are saying, did you get your mail today? Was there a box that's moved? So it's going from town to town, specifically rural areas and areas with black and brown folks. What kind of switching gears, how does this fall into a criminal justice situation?
Well, it's a crime to conspire to commit another crime and conspire to disenfranchise minority people, rural people, and even people in the city of their right to vote by preventing them from utilizing a mail-in ballot with an assurance that their vote will be counted is a direct violation of that Voting Rights Act. So if there was an agency that was impartial, such as the FBI or the Attorney General, who could investigate this, it would be, and I said the Attorney General tongue-in-cheek, who could investigate this, that's the type of thing that we really need. But I think in lieu of the fact that these institutions that have been around forever have now been corrupted with sycophants of President Trump, the individual state cases are very important because each state has its own voting rights acts that are more or less parallel to what the federal one says, to a large extent. And since those attorney generals are now sort of, I guess, coordinating to investigate what's going on, we may see some help there. The individual lawsuits is also very, very helpful. The problem there, of course, is that an individual lawsuit won't get to, let's say, the Supreme Court for years unless it's super accelerated. And President Trump won't listen to anything. We don't even know if he'll really listen to the Supreme Court if he rules against them. But and then, of course, we have the ACLU, and I mentioned AARP. And I'm sure they're going to be bringing cases.
Well, Kevin, just to piggyback on what you said, there's a congressman in New Jersey who is referring the matter over to the New Jersey Attorney General for a criminal investigation. Likewise, a representative in California similarly referred the matter over to the California Attorney General for a possible criminal prosecution alleging conspiracy between the Postmaster General and the sycophants of President Trump. So they're at least for now appears to be some action taken towards redressing this, and hopefully particularly directing it towards an unbiased party. Hopefully some mileage can certainly result from that. One of the other things I think that the audience should be made aware of is for the past 20 years or so, the Republican Party has been trying to privatize the post office. So this isn't really new, the Republican effort to undermine the effectiveness and the efficiency of the post office because of their desire ultimately to privatize, you know, the sacred institution. We certainly can't lose sight of that. Trump and his sycophants effectively are trying to get the boast of the best of all possible worlds, to disenfranchise the people, in addition to revamp the entire postal system and make it a profit generating entity.
If anything, the simple fact of mail-in ballots should kind of dissuade us from wanting something privatized, such as the postal system.
Oh, sure. Sure. Absolutely.
You know, everyone doesn't have email. I'm just pointing out that everyone isn't on the grid or electronically and whatnot, and the post office has been there for people since this country started 250 years ago or so. And it's to me, it's sad to see what's happening now.
Well, that's just the people let it happen. Hopefully we won't. And as you mentioned earlier, the post office also has been instrumental in guiding African-American families into the middle class. As you indicated earlier, the post office does employ a disproportionate number of African Americans. We constitute 13% of the population, and the post office employs 23% of the postal workers are African American. So there is a historical significance of that in terms of, like I said, bringing African American families historically into the middle class. To disband that the institution now would result in obviously an economic impact on the African American community in that vein.
I see that. That dovetails with my comments about upholding the institutions of our government and not letting them be destroyed by an autocrat. And I don't mean just the FBI, but all the institutions. And I think that's where it all ties in together, the protests, what's going on. I think President Trump sees the writing on the wall, and he's looking for an exit strategy, not necessarily to leave, but an exit strategy to say, here's why I didn't win, and here's why it didn't count, and I really did win. And this Postal Service issue will give him that. And that's why it has to be stopped. And apparently it's having some effect, because there's some alleged promises that he's going to allow funding up to $10 billion. And that, of course, that he is the one who determines this is wrong, because the Congress has the power of the purse, or they used to, until President Trump just used executive orders on the latest round of stimulus when Congress couldn't agree.
Right. Well, just to segue into an area you briefly touched and mentioned in the beginning, the police brutality protests, the continued protests throughout the nation. And Kevin, you and I work on a variety of cases involving police brutality issues in the past. Can you tell the audience, in terms of your personal background, your feelings in terms of dealing with police deception and misconduct in connection with some of the brutality cases that you've worked on personally?
Well, I can. I mean, I had some experiences that I think were eye-opening, because maybe my background is different than some of the people, but my father actually was in law enforcement. He worked for the district attorney's office in New York for his whole career. I wasn't necessarily a what you'd call law and order guy, but I believed in that there was some integrity on the part of the police. And as I worked on these civil rights cases, some of them with Steve, I learned by experience that this wasn't necessarily so. Several years ago, we worked on a case called Minio, and in that case, the evidence was destroyed. The most crucial piece of evidence was taken home by one of the city attorneys, and the next day was missing. The witnesses who were going to testify for us that were city employees were intimidated, to the point where one of them told us she would lose her job if she testified to the truth. And shocking stuff to hear. And the police officers involved, at least some of them, had actually testified previously in other hearings related to the matter. And then when they were in our case in federal court, the civil case, the civil rights, they basically recanted their testimony and didn't remember it. I don't recall that. It's like this. This is what it was. I don't know what I said before. So, it was out and out lying. And other witnesses as well lied. And there was like photographic evidence to show it was a lie. But, you say something is so, and somebody might believe you. So that was one of the things I learned. And that's why when I see the apologists the apologists for, you know, oh, well, you know, only one or two people were killed by the police. That's not so. These are just the ones that were recorded on video and happened to be disseminated on social media and caught our eye. I think the number are really incalculable.
You're going right back to you abandon the facts. You abandon the freedom. In reference to criminal justice reform, because a lot of the audience might not have seen this type of upheaval in their lifetime, and the concept of defunding the police, I think Senator Cory Booker just spoke about the pros and cons and putting more resources into the community. Can you speak to that?
Oh, yeah. I know Steve won't agree with me, but I don't personally like the words defunding the police because some people have a visceral reaction, and I've seen it in the people I speak to. Oh, no, we can't do that. Look at all the people being, you know, robbed or shot or whatever. Well, the police budget was already set for this year. It should be reallocation of resources. I mean, now marijuana is being decriminalized somewhat, but it's still a crime. And, you know, you have people being locked up for petty things that, you know, like George Floyd was allegedly accused of trying to pass a counterfeit 20, I think. And then he died for that. That's just unbelievable. And it's really reallocation of resources, as you pointed out, Erica, into community services that perhaps could respond to a call that the police would have gone on before, or can meet with a family that's in need to avoid a confrontation where the police will come, or to let the police know where a mentally challenged person lives so they don't go there with their guns out because he's doing something inappropriate. That's the kind of community policing we need. And there's a million other examples, but that's the kind of community policing.
That's all, Kevin, is, you know, we talked about this. That's all part of the concept of the funding, as you indicated, it is restructuring or reallocating our resources. And quite frankly, in some instances, defunding some aspects of the police department. The police department does not need tanks. The police department does not need paramilitary weapons, paramilitary equipment to deal with the citizens of this country. Those type of expenditures should be eliminated and completely defunded. So to that extent, the word defund does have an appropriate application to that whole process.
I think we could summarize this as Al Gore said tonight, get your knee off our democracy, both for the post office and in reference to criminal justice and police brutality. Kevin Mosley, it was a pleasure to have you on the show. We need to bring you back. Is there anything you would like to leave our audience with a call to action?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, just first of all, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be on the show. To you and Steve. And yeah, absolutely. Everyone should do what they can. Get out there, speak to people, help people, show as much kindness as you can. And when you are out there protesting, be polite, be careful. So I think we're slowly changing the country here. And it's a good thing. Patriotic.
Steven, any last words for the audience?
Yeah, well, sure. As we all know, there's nothing this president will not do to get reelected. Lying, suppressing votes, putting Americans at risk health-wise, particularly those who are not his supporters, pitting one American against the other. We have a chance to end this nightmare on November 3rd. Please, people, vote. Let's stop the madness.
Thank you for listening to Cult of the Rainbow. If you like more information, check us out on Facebook and Twitter.
This is Pulse of the People.